She released her first poetry chapbook, You Won't Dance With Me, in December 2013. She is currently working on her next collection of poems entitled Blood, Gold, and Honey, which are a few of her favorite things, and it takes the shape of a fictional tarot deck. A photo climbs in her spare time in order to gain perspective. And then a little bit about her work here. Though a Virgo, Rose's poetic sensibility embraces her polar Piscean nature. Her poems ooze with liquid sensibility as the images and archetypes flounder around in the oceans of origins and the seas of surrender, unquote. Whether she's whipping us up medieval West Bank cocktails or altering the elemental makeup of the tarot, a Froze never forgets that the body is three-fourths fluid, always slipping in and out of time, always coursing with blood, a drink that, quote, cannot be bottled nor swallowed, but only incubated. Please welcome Froze.
That was hands down the best introduction I've ever had in my life. Thank you, Matt. Thank you to Matt and to Deborah and to everybody who made this evening possible and for you for being here. I'm very excited. I'm going to faint on stage. This feels like very lovely intimate space. So let's just get comfortable. Let it all hang out. I'm going to read from a few different things for you tonight. And the first is called Body of Water. Matt quoted it, and it's very much about liquidity and fluidity. And it was inspired by my friend and a wonderful visual artist, Alia Gupta, who invited me into her studio last year when she was making a lot of work about water. I think this was in maybe July or August of last year. And she invited me to write in response to her work. And at the time, I was very much engaged with the events that were happening at Standing Rock and thinking about our right to water and water as elemental and so fundamental to us and to our existence. And was thinking about how with the Black Lives Matter movement and this, refrain of like, I can't breathe, that our access to basic things that we need, like air and water, were being cut off. So I wrote, she asked me to write one poem in response to her work, and I ended up kind of creating this whole chapbook of prose poetry because I was just so engaged with it. And we did a show last year in October, and she had some of my work kind of on the wall with her installations. And actually this year for her show, it's at Core Gallery in Pioneer Square this next month in August, she's keeping the water theme going and has reprised it and is going to have some of my work in the gallery, and we'll do a reading at the closing next month. So check that out, Core Gallery in Pioneer Square, and she's amazing, incredible. So I'm going to read to you from Body of Water. The hope of the heart is to beat forever, even when the body has ceased breathing, even when everyone who has ever held their heart in their hands, whether gently or carelessly, has melted into the earth as well. The tissue of the simple organ has one desire, to be. Beat. The waves crash to its rhythm. The sun pulses solar flares to its rhythm. The tides retreat and advance. At times timid, at times bold, military maneuvering to its rhythm. The cat, who places one paw upon her chest as an invitation, an asking, and when he receives an affirmation, he wraps himself around her midsection and won't let go to the rhythm of the heart. The small death is a dry mist. It is her skin, both the color and composition of mud, a cracking, desiccated lake bed, its wetness devoured by white lotuses, sucking until all the molecules of her body of water are deflated, gone to dust. Water. It drips in your thoracic cavity and wears away the scar tissue that has built up over years of loss and fuckery, the aches and the ecstasies, the grace and the tragedy. Water. It drips and drips until there is a small hole scooped from the soft, fertile earth of your heart, and you can place your treasure there, inconsequential as it is to the rest of the cosmos, and carefully cover it with compost from the carcasses of your lost loves to grow new life there. So body of water is in two sections, and the first section is really exploring how water can be the thing that drowns us in the sense of being lost out at sea and adrift. And the second part is supposed to be more about, you know, union and communion with the divine. I don't know if it is, actually. Like, it was supposed to be more positive, but I'm not sure it is. But you can tell me how it lands with you. So. How do we not experience ourselves as liquid? How is it that we believe we are so very solid? When there is water in every square unit of our skins, when original sin was committed for the juice, when the heat and the honey are flowing through us constantly, cyclically, revolutions around our bodies, which are not just clay and mud, they are not just dust to dust, but sea to radiant, illuminated, luminous, shining sea. The sin of the modern world is the belief that we are all solid, and that we should be, that oceans don't erect their own boundaries. They do. They do as salt and ooze eats away, corrodes at the edges. We learn to dance by opening our mouths upward to the heavens, raining sustenance on us, and we thought, if it is so easy to be nourished and nurtured, let's move our bodies and wriggle and roll and twist our souls just a little bit. The dance of water, the joy of the deep. Let's be all liquid. We won't be exacting and count and cut to measure all the ways that we owe each other. Let's be perceived. Just for one early morning, I want to be a fish with you. Flounder around in the oceans of origins and the seas of serenity. Let's go to school together. Learn to swim as a sect, mimicking each other's movement. That's a little bit from Body of Water. The next piece I'm going to read to you is from a also longish prose poem called Season's Greetings. And I, about 4 years ago, under a very intense period of grief, my sister was very close to pass away suddenly and just kind of dropped me into a rabbit hole. You know, it was like a whole domino effect of a lot of other like shitty bullshit that happened that I'm not going to talk about. And I wrote about it in some very personal ways, very specific ways, for the first little bit of time. And then last summer, again, around the time that I wrote Body of Water, there's a lot of similarity in the two pieces. And I wrote Season's Greetings as a distillation, I think, of that experience of grief. And through my grieving process and understanding that, like, we are so terrible at letting grief flow to us, and we're so terrible at holding other people's grief in our world, even though all of us experience it. And sort of learning that, like, we obviously experience grief around people who pass on, relationships that end. We also need to experience and express our grief around the things that we deserve to have that we never got, and the dreams that we have that won't be possible because of this really terrible world we live in. And my, like, very intense anxiety around feeling like the world is going to end because ecologically we're just, like, it's a mess. Chance of Seasons Grievings gives voice to that. And I also like really bad puns. And so, yeah. There's also like a metaphor there, you'll hear it. It's in the poem. Your grief is not a muddy puddle. You cannot jump over it. Your grief is not a riptide. It will not pull you under. Your grief is not a stepchild. You may not forget her. Your grief is not a challenge or a quest or even a compass. Your grief is a layer of leaves on the forest floor, constantly underfoot, cracking with the pressure exerted by your soles. Wanting to be one with the earth again. Your grief has a life cycle. It is incubated. It is born. It grows and learns to speak and seems to have a mind belonging only to it. It doesn't care whether you are tired or meeting a deadline. When it is hungry, you must feed it. What does your grief like to eat? It craves remembrance. Take your grief to the last body of water you sat by with your dead beloved and cry. 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 Repeat her name. Repeat it. Chant it to the rhythm of your own heartbeat. Drop the pitch so low and speed up the rate so much until her name is the buzzing of 100 hives of angry bees despairing at the death of the mortal world. Your grief loves to eat dance too. The dance of words at home. The dance of emotional striptease. Slowly with aching desire, peeling a glove of concealment or a feather boa of misdirection from the very plain, very honest animal body of the soul. And of course, the dance of the body itself, when it is cloaked only in your grief and lies on the honeywood floor of the dance studio, weeping and yet still moving, still rolling and marching and feeling the very threads of the music holding you together. Your grief is a crying baby, a starving child. When it is not fed, the world cannot roll along easily in its orbit. You can try to ignore it. try to turn the volume up on the dance hits that advocate for forgetting. Try to kiss pale eyes goodnight and close them to seeing. But your grief wants me to collect those leaves from the forest floor. Wants you to daily turn the compost bin with a pitchfork, mixed with watermelon rinds and tea bags and coffee grounds. Wants you to know what season in your life it is, so that you don't get fed up trying to grow wildflowers in an impoverished earth. Season's greetings. And the last little bit that I'm going to read from is my project, Blood, Gold, and Honey, that Matt very sort of enticingly introduced. And I found one of the things that I do, and I'm still doing it, for a couple of years actually, made a living off of when I'm writing poems on the street for people. I'm a typewriter, and you probably see these folks who are like, you go up to them and you say, I want a poem about lust. And they're like, I'll write you a poem about lust. And you give them whatever you want. And it was kind of this incredible experience for me. And a practice of like trust and faith in my own creative process, and trust and faith in other people to not hate what I write, and to like appreciate it fiscally. And so after about a year of doing that, I met back over all written for people, so I've taken pictures and kept a record. And I realized that the images and the touchstones that I constantly go back to were blood, gold, and honey. And I knew after that moment, you know, that I wanted to write a book. I wanted to write something called Blood, Gold, and Honey, and I did not know what it was going to be. And I don't exactly know how it happened, but they turned into a tarot deck. And it's not based on the traditional tarot. There's three suits, they're blood, gold, and honey. And there's a major arcana, and I'm like very far away from being done with it. It's probably gonna take, I don't know how long it's gonna take. I'm not done, but I'm very impatient, so I'm gonna read to you from it tonight. But I would love for somebody who has a question and has something that is troubling them right now to volunteer to receive a reading. So who here, I see you shaking your head, I don't know, it sounds like maybe you have some resistance, which is usually a good sign that that's like where you need to push forward and get a reading. Yeah?
Sure.
Okay, come on. Come on. So this is the past, present, future reading. Sophie, are you ready for your past? For the card that represents your past? Okay. Give me a second, because it's going to take some time to actually find the card.
And so the deck has one poem that describes the image on the card. It's a short verse poem. And then there's a second poem that is representative of like a ritual that you have the option of practicing and reprising in order to sort of like release the energies the week.
So your past card is the Nine of Gold. The Hermit. Winged feet folded under her writing desk. composes the story of Raven Seals the Sun. Blackbird in the Dead Dance. Crow's feet dipped in ink. Two steps and tangos across the parchment of the sky, making our own lens. Oh, how we were thieves, taking stars from the greedy gods, for everything sacred must be stolen. And here's the ritual, if you so choose to accept it. Collect the carcass of a septuagenarian raven, picked over by vultures, off the winding path of Highway 101, among the curling lichen of the Ho rainforest, dappled with disco ball light, filtered through second growth cedar trees. Serve in a stew. Alright, so eventually this is going to be like a deck of cards, and then I think like the rituals are going to be an associated book, but for the moment I just kind of have to... So here's your present card, Sophie. It is the One of Honey. The origin of essence. The start of sweetness. Royal jelly bottle fed to the larva, secreted honeydew of worker bees. The illumination of the hive queen with a halo of hunger for the egg. Bee milk from the fuzzed breast. Here's a ritual. Attempt to copulate. Fail. Spread royal jelly on your fresh baked rolls as an aphrodisiac. Attempt to procreate. Fail. Coat your stork stolen dreams with royal jelly. Steal from bees. Bring more people onto the planet. Very exciting. Like this one. I love all of them. And here we go. Okay, Sophie. Here's your future card. It is the God of Gold. Master of the firm, yet malleable metal sector. Skin gilded. Crown unnamed, the king knows no want. Desire reverberates through every cell anyways, but this is not sex with Midas. Less is more. Enough is too much. Here's a wish. Melt down the 24-carat wedding trousseau of an Indian bride in an arranged marriage. Tiny rubies glitter like scarab beetles' eyes among the cooling alloy. Wrap the misshapen metal in bloodstain, 10,000 count, ivory nuptial sheets. Thanks for getting a reading, Sophie.
You're welcome.
Thank you all. This has been just a lovely pleasure. And I'm very excited to hear Abby and Catherine read.
Oh, let's hear it for our post. Yeah, that was sick.